We're not, you know, exactly the Washington Post, okay?
No. No, we're not. We run stupid headlines because we think they're funny. Mm-hmm. We run maimings on the front page because we got good art. And I spend 3 weeks bitching about my car because it sells papers. But at least it's the truth. As far as I can remember, we never, ever, ever knowingly got a story wrong. Until tonight.
That's the state of the left today, never knowingly getting the story right, but story wrong, but they're getting it wrong every day, folks. It's Reese on the radio. After a long, long hiatus and a very, very tumultuous visit to New York City going through a trial, you can imagine I am somewhat mentally and physically exhausted. Let's just say, folks, that today I do not have the greatest news in the world. And I'm going to need your help. Not that there's much that you can do. But, you know, in my heart of hearts, I've already made my decision on this. So let me give you the breakdown. The breakdown is this, is that the district attorney's office is saying that they want me to strike a deal. They want me to take a deal.
Again.
Yeah, one more time. Now, the last time there was a deal, it was sometime around early 2010, maybe late 2009, around November, I believe, 2009, just around Thanksgiving. And the deal was take time served, take a felony, register as a sex offender, you'll never ever see upstate, just go home.
You can be home by Christmas.
That's right. That's exactly what it was. Be home by Christmas. Well, it was then when I spoke to my attorney, David Cohen, at that particular time said to me that I should take the deal. Said it was a gimme. It's a gift. Of course, I responded by going to the people at CNN, who, of course, did that report, which you can read on ReeseOnTheRadio.com, or you can listen to, I say, or watch on ReeseOnTheRadio.com. And watch it for yourself. That's what I did instead. Pretty much said I'm not taking a deal for anything. Well, now it's come to another case. We're back at it, ready to go to trial. There's this big, huge argument in the case on whether or not the witness was going to talk about her claims of rape. She was too traumatized, as she said, too traumatized to get on the stand and talk about it. Now, as I've expressed here on Reese on the Radio, I've told you over and over again, we know what the truth is. And I'm pretty sure that if anybody has a brain, I would suspect that they've probably been using my radio show as a prepper, as a to prop up the accuser in my case. Listen to what he's saying. Listen to what he's saying about you. Listen to how he's talking about it. Look how defiant he is. If you don't believe me, folks, let me just give you a breakdown, okay? We get a crap load of listens to our show, to Reese on the Radio, after we go on the air. After we go on the air, the next day, our listenership is amazing on a regular basis. I'll just put it to you this way. Never, ever, as far as I'm concerned, our most recent post numbers are large. And they are. I don't know why people come back to listen to them. They could be for a host of reasons. Folks, last September 27th, the last day we did our show, our post listener was 1,000.
What? Wow.
So
they're archived listeners.
Right, archived listeners. It's a post listenership. 1,000. For an internet show, that's ridiculous. For an online show, that's ridiculous. Some online shows get a lot of popularity, but post shows, that's huge. But let me put it to you this way, just to give you some insight on this.
Well, thanks for listening.
And yeah, we really appreciate that. But anyway, so the bottom line is this. They have decided Well, they first decided they were going to drop the rape charges and have a trial for the misdemeanors. That's what was going to happen. I was going to be tried on misdemeanors. But my lawyer said, if we have a misdemeanor trial, we want to use all the quote-unquote sketchy information about the alleged rape. And we want to bring that in cross-examination. Well, I don't know whether or not that frightened them or that upset them, but the bottom line is it said, hey, if you're going to bring up the rape, we're going to keep the rape charge. Which, to me, never ever was an issue. We in no way, since April 6th, when I walked out of that jail in Manhattan, never once was I under the impression that somebody was going to drop a charge against me. I was never under the impression that I was not going to be tried again for the same thing. You heard me on this radio show countless times. Let's go. Let's get ready. Until my lawyer, who is a good guy, but again, is now pushing for me to take a deal and suggest that that might be the best thing for me to do. Get this over with, go on with your life, and register as a sex offender. Probably a level one, where I'll have to register for 20 years of my life. I could probably petition to be taken off the list. There are plenty of things that I could probably do, but the bottom line is I'm going to have to register, in essence, for 20 years of my life. I have to give up my personal information to the police, like my email address, my internet provider. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I won't be on a national registry. I mean, that'll be, you know, that's fine, but people will be able to look my name up. Every 3 years, I have to make sure I go in for a new mugshot. Yeah, there's a lot that's entailed in all of this. So in essence, my life becomes, I mean, it is.
You're in prison anyway.
It's a virtual prison.
Yeah. You can roam around.
Yeah, I can do anything. I can go anywhere. I can move anywhere I want. But as soon as I move in, got to register within 10 days of me living there. Got to go directly to the police department, take the mugshots again. And you can forget about a career. Yeah.
Well, you forget about a career in radio.
I mean, you know, there have been some people out there who, you know, still had careers. I mean, Marvell Scott.
Who the hell is that?
You don't know who Marvell Scott is?
No.
Oh, we'll talk about it later. But look, the number's 347-308-8701. And also, you can catch me on email, reeseontheradio@yahoo.com. And tell me your thoughts. I'm supposed to have a conversation with my lawyer tomorrow, who's supposed to call sometime in the afternoon or whatever. And the question is whether or not I should take a deal. And he'll probably hammer me over and over again, take the deal, take the deal, take the deal. But I don't think that I can. And I think the fear is here probably because it's a different judge. Probably because certain things that we got in the last trial we didn't get in this trial. It could be a slew of different things. But the facts are the facts. And the defense witness is still the defense witness. And that is the detective who she made the original report to. And the false claims. I mean, that's just the bottom line.
No deal.
I think we've pretty much made a decision.
There is no deal.
I don't think so.
No. Not going to happen.
I don't think it's going to happen either. I got to give this guy his proper introduction because he hasn't been here for a while, and it's only right that I show him his respect. I don't know where the hell he's been. He's been missing in action for a long time. Everyone, give a warm welcome to a guy you haven't heard in a long time. Thank God he's back, to good old Kool-Aid.
Oh, yeah.
James Montgomery, who's back in the mix today. Hello, my good friend, Jaime.
And hello, my good friend, Reese, Edwin Reese Hawkins.
Please stop calling me Edwin. How are you, sir?
I am doing. Actually, I've been calling in. Actually, I've been doing pretty good up until, like, today. But that's why I haven't called in that well, you know, that much. There's just been a couple of things that's been going on in my life. However, what I want to say is no deal, all right? Howie Mandel couldn't say it better himself. No deal. No deal. The thing is, they're losing their case already. Why should you now take a deal when the case is falling apart? And it has been for years.
Well, Jane, let me give you my thoughts on this, okay? When I first heard this, I couldn't even believe it. I was like, are you for real? Are these people for real?
Been saying that for quite a while now.
If you have a case, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If you're the DA and you have a case and you know this is a grand slam,
mm-hmm.
Why are you offering him a deal? If you can convict him of rape and give him 25 years in jail, which basically would be the rest of his life, he'd be 68 when
right.
he got out. Okay, so what are you going to do at 68?
Now, let's do you one better.
So, hold on, let me finish.
Okay.
There is no way in hell anybody's taking no deal.
Right.
It's not
However, right, the thing is, you know, and again, I'm going to go you one better, all right? Especially when it comes to the deal. The whole taking a plea thing is they want you to do their job for them,
yep.
So they don't have to. That's why the deal comes in the first place.
Of course.
Right? Now,
of course. But once again, if they knew that they could convict him, it's like scare tactics. I call it terrorism.
Yeah. Yes, and I agree. Yes, and I agree totally. But now, see, the thing is, conversely, though, they're still using it as a scare tactic. Now, they're the ones backing off because the case is now dropped from a felony to a misdemeanor. And they're like, oh, well, then now they're still trying to get you to do their job for them. Oh, well, it's only a misdemeanor.
James, I think you misunderstood what was going on. They have not dropped the felony charges. They have not put that on the record. They never went before the judge and put any of that on the record, okay? They did their preliminary stuff with the judge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they talked to the judge for 2 days. Well, one and a quarter days. Half days. Okay? They never put that, the DA never said, we're dropping the top two charges and we're moving forward with two misdemeanors. So those charges have not been dropped. And that's why they're going to...
So I know where I stand, because it really doesn't matter. Right, at least in my eyes, it really doesn't matter. But so, you know, just so I'm on the same page, please explain to me what's happening now.
The bottom line is this, very simple, okay? Their bottom line was they were going to officially say after we did our pre-trial agreements, right, in court, we're going to meet in front of a judge. We make our arguments about what is and what isn't admissible evidence, what questions we could ask, what questions they could ask, what evidence they could present, what evidence we could present.
Let me just stop you right there. Wait, I'm sorry to cut you off. But again, just for my own edification, there's been no real, actual,
Chris Rock.
Okay. For the last how many years?
Well, no, we're moving forward. He's been assigned a trial judge.
Right.
No longer seeing Judge Wiley on a monthly basis for a continuance. There's a trial judge that's been assigned. It's not even in the same court building that Judge Wiley is in. Okay, we know who that is. And the lawyers have his lawyer and the DA's office have gone to the trial judge, presented their cases.
Right, and they've gotten their continuances to get more evidence.
No, there's no more continuances.
No more continuances.
There's no more continuances. Okay, when we go back to court on Tuesday, it's going to be finishing up all of their preliminary stuff, and then then we're going to pick the jury.
Right.
Okay.
So
back to what I said before. All right, back to what I just said, you know, a minute ago, it really doesn't matter because as you said, Mary, if it was such a slam dunk, why has it been taking so long in the first place?
Okay, it's been taking so long because this entire 18 months, my accuser has been refusing to even meet with the district attorney's office, saying that she was too traumatized to have met with them and to discuss this alleged rape anymore and didn't want to testify to it. Now, listen to what I'm saying. Let me finish. It's important that you hear this. The bottom line is that during our pretrial hearings, my lawyer said if they're going to drop the top charges of rape, that should not exclude us from asking about these false charges of rape when we get her on the stand for the misdemeanors. When the judge then said, I'll allow that, they went back during lunch break and said, then what are we dropping those charges for if he's only going to discuss them anyway? We're not charging him with it, but he's going to talk about it to make him look like a liar? That's where that is.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, the fact of the matter is you are the one who has been, gag ordered. All right? Everyone else, you know, the lawyers, whether it's not even your defense lawyer, but the prosecution has been able to say whatever they want. Maybe not in open court or whatever. They've been able to say whatever they wanted. Now you're saying, okay, well, if you're going to bring this up, then I can refute it.
Well, no, the bottom line is that what are they dropping the charge for if indeed we're only going to bring up that she lied about it? You understand what I'm saying? They don't believe that she lied about it, but if we are going to show the jury and provide evidence that she lied about it, why drop it altogether? So by dropping then turning around and saying, forget it, we're going to meet with her and tell her, listen, we know his course of action. We are going to keep the charges anyway and just have the trial all over again. So apparently they're going to have the trial all over again. But the bottom line is that they are still saying, look, you can avoid this trial if he just takes the misdemeanors and registers as a sex offender.
Again.
We'll drop the charges. Or he can go
again.
No. Officially, they'll officially drop the charges. I'll have to plead guilty to the misdemeanors, register as a sex offender. I'll never have to go to court again.
And basically, you can go home. This what they're telling you again. They're telling you again. They're trying to get you to do their job for them. They can't do their job. Their job is to convict you for a crime.
Right. Exactly.
Whether you did it or not, they don't care.
You're absolutely right.
They don't. Now, The fact of the matter is this thing has been going on for what, 3 years?
Four.
4 years. They still haven't, and as Mary said, I have said over and over again, and I'm sure you have said over and over again, and no matter how competent or incompetent or, you know, whatever the case may be, your lawyer has said, if it's such a slam dunk, why haven't you gone to court and done it? But this case has been dragged on and dragged on and dragged on because they can't make their case.
Very good.
They still can't make their case because there's no case to be made. And now the prosecution and the judiciary body knows this. However, they're doing spin damage.
You're right.
They know you're going to walk. They know. They already know. They've known. You said 4 years? They knew 3 years ago. But they want to get out of it. This is their exit plan. They want to get out of it without a black eye.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. JC, what do you want to say?
I was going to say simply, they're basically using abuse of power, I want to say. If I had to take it to the Supreme Court of the United States, I would still do everything that I can once it's also all said and done was to sue the district attorney's office, because right now they're bullying. They're trying to bully under the guise of immunity because they know that they themselves can't be sued.
They're skirting the law, and they're skirting, well, not, maybe not the law.
They're
but
not
they're,
skirting,
they're
bullying.
Skirting discretion.
Yeah.
All right, they're skirting their judiciary discretion to drag this out. And the thing is, that's what they're trying to do. Period, and bottom line. They're trying to drag it out as much as possible.
Okay, but
so
James,
you,
James.
You,
James.
Please let me finish. So Reese finally decides, well, you know what? I'm just so tired of coming back into court.
Yeah.
I'm just so tired.
Okay, but you know what? As of right
now,
I'm
gonna throw you the phone, but they're losing.
James, as of right now, all of this will be said and done in probably the next 2 weeks.
Cool.
Whatever is going to happen in the next 2 weeks, like, so this, it's on. It's not like they can't go to the judge and say, we need a continuance. Our witness isn't ready. The judge is not going to grant them a continuance. The judge knows that this has been going on for far too long. The case is moving forward, and shit is getting real.
Yeah, it's on my
let me just be clear about one other thing, please.
Go ahead.
All right. Now, are you saying that it's still the same judge that's been there for 3 years, or are they trying to?
No.
We told you. We've been seeing a judge every single month, and every single month the DA has come to that same judge, Judge Wiley, and said, we need a continuance. Judge Wiley has granted them that continuance. This time, they went to the judge. They said, okay, we are ready for trial.
You sound like you're underwater.
Oh.
No, we finally got a judge. It's Judge Edward McLaughlin. We've already got a judge. We've already been in front of him, so we've already proceeded. Anyway,
so
I'll tell you.
So, preliminary judge.
Yeah, this is the trial judge, James. This is the trial.
Oh, so it's going to be in a new venue. It's going before a new judge.
It's already been in that venue.
Yeah.
We've already moved to that venue.
First and foremost, it shouldn't have got this far. The judge that you had, I know me and Reese have had this conversation off air many times before. However, I'm going to say all these continuances, if you're not ready, if you weren't ready 2 years ago, you're not going to be ready now.
Well, no, I mean, they're ready now. They don't have a choice.
Listen, I don't even think that Judge Wiley, as many times as he's already granted them continuances after continuances, I don't think that even he at this point wanted to hear that and would have heard that. It probably wasn't even an option. They knew they had to do something.
Yeah. Yeah, it had to be done. But that's all right. All right, we'll take a break when we come back. I'll give you some more info, last bit of info, and then, of course, we'll get into the debate and these job numbers. Since James is here, we'll talk about the president. We'll be back at 3:30 Radio.
Cookie and talk about your day, or we could take a walk down by the ocean. I heard those hip openers release a lot of emotion. It's all good though, you know, like either way. You feel like going with me?
Nah, I'm gonna stay.
Hey yo girl,
your breathing sounds just a little heavy, cool guy. You need to come to class and learn some ujjayi. I know you see me every single day like Groundhog, and I appreciate it, but I'm not down, dog. I'm gonna grab a coconut water and be on my way. I wish you peace and blessings. Namaste.
Hey, yo, girl.
To get to know ya, I got a couple next level poses I can show ya. My first choice, rub lotion on my fifth joint. It's thoughts of you that keep my man Duke of Matt moist. Your aura's glowing, your Taria steady flowing. I signed you up for my newsletter without you knowing. I wanna fly your whole posse to Varanasi, or we can go to Goa and sip some mango lassi, cause I love it when you call me Big Baba. I wanna explore your Bodhisattva, unblock my chakras. You got my fourth level exposed. When you fold them Lululemons in a bow pose, you're like a model with that metal water bottle always with you. Trying to be sleepy fish, straight up.
Hey, yo, girl. I just wanna know.
Namaste.
soon enough. Anyway, DJ Dave talking smog. It's Reese on the Radio. It's the bottom of the hour right here on blogtalkradio.com. It is October the 5th, 2012. If you're just joining us and you came in late, again, as I told you, the prosecutor is offering a deal of two misdemeanors where I would pretty much have to admit that someone touched my genitalia and take a deal and then register as a sex offender for 20 years where everything in my life would pretty much be at the mercy of the
under
police
surveillance.
Department. Under surveillance. Pretty much under surveillance. Usual suspect.
Like house arrest.
Right. Kid goes missing. Knocking at my door. Hey, Mr. Hopkins. Can we search your premises? You know.
You know what? I didn't even think about that.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, my God.
You know, so, you know, it would be like being on parole.
Yeah, for 20 years.
Goodness gracious. You know, it's absolutely insane. Let's bring James and, of course, our good friend Dennis in Massachusetts. Dennis the Menace, who we haven't talked to in a while. How you feeling, Dennis?
I feel pretty good. Had the needle in the eye yesterday.
Wow.
I saw that you said it wasn't as bad as you thought it was going to be.
Yeah, the biggest deal was having the bright lights in my eye.
Wow. Yeah, because they put
being
a contraption on your eye.
I was surrounded by liberals, and that was enough to kill me, too.
God.
So, I mean, can you disclose what kind of surgery it was altogether, or?
There were two things. Yes, and it was a needle in the eye for macular degeneration.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
Last week was a surgery to bring the arteries and the veins close to the skin, and God forbid, in case any dialysis.
Right.
All
right, well, James is obviously in the middle of the conversation. But you're feeling better?
Something broke up in there.
Yeah, that was James. So you're feeling all right? You're okay? You're good to go?
No.
No? What's that, rehab or all that stuff?
No. I'm more concerned about you. That's what's bringing me down right now.
Because you
have to face all this bullshit.
Look, I trust me, I know that. The one thing about all of this that I said, you know, 1,000 times over, you know, I got questioned about whether or not this was an issue of my pride. You know, and I thought about that a lot today, about whether or not this was an issue of pride. And that is a very difficult question for me as far as pride. Would I consider myself a prideful person? Of course. Is my good name in some way going to be tarnished by taking some deal? Look, as long as I've been accused, my name is always going to have that smudge, if you will, on it. You know, I'm always going to be associated with this case, no matter how
long it is.
All right,
if you take the deal, what's the worst that can happen? Let's see it from the prosecution side. What's the worst can they hit you with? You've already said the 20-year sex offender.
Right. It's 20,
what about any hard time?
There's no time. No jail time, no nothing.
And then there's the chance that you'll be acquitted.
Well, the
what's
bottom
their
line,
chance of if you're acquitted, how does it make them look? If
well,
it was them.
Here's where the issue is. Now, let's say we go to trial and we get the same outcome. We get another mistrial. Then we do this trial all over again.
No, at this point, I think that they would say, okay, enough is enough. We're dropping it. They would not continue three trials. Come on.
I don't even believe that.
I believe
that for several reasons.
I don't.
Somebody
in the higher ups would get wind of this and say, you know what, you sons of bitches, you have spent way too much of the taxpayers' money. We're already in a crisis. We can't know. That's it. You got it. Somebody else in the higher up will.
Are you the trophy nigger?
This is costing money.
And I mean that. If you get convicted, to them, are you the trophy nigger? Because you're conservative and black.
Well, it's funny because during pretrial, you know, that kept coming up.
Did it come up?
Oh, sure it did. My argument was, you know, this thing. I kept being called, and the term, even the judge sort of asked what the hell the meaning was, and I wanted to scream at my lawyer about this. They were using this term neocon, calling me a neocon.
What the hell does that have to do with the charges at hand?
Well,
that's the underlying that I think what this is really about and why you've gone through this bullshit.
You're probably right about that in a large way, But let me just tell you something, because there's an audio piece that I want to play today, and I hope that I still have it up. So forgive me if it takes me a second. I saw this story today on Breitbart. And look, I'm not – I can't say I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I am to some degree. I like conspiracy theories. I like talking about them. I like being engaged in them, especially when they have some sort of, you know, not well, I want to say proof, but have some plausibility, I guess the best way to put it. But I heard this audio today of a NAACP charter president who got a phone call from the Obama administration because this NAACP member was critical of President Obama. He was forced to call the police and file a police report because an Obama surrogate called him up and told him, "We know about you. He says, I know all about you. I know who you are. We are watching you." And something along the lines of, "You better watch your back." Because he was critical of President Obama. Now, Dennis, you've brought this up plenty of times before. I was under the impression, I'm not that big of a fish. I don't really, a lot of the stuff that I do on the air when I was at WRKO was a lot of tongue-in-cheek hyperbole. I got that. I wasn't trying to be taken seriously other than when I was talking about the issues. But when I attacked President Obama, and I definitely went after Hillary Clinton in those ways, everyone warned me, Reese, look out.
Because, can I jump in real quick?
Yeah, go ahead, JC.
If you remember, and I don't know if I'm getting ahead of you of the story and where you're going with this, and I'm hoping I'm not spoiling it, but I said that the day you got off of CNN.
The day that I got off of CNN?
Right.
Well, in what are you talking about that? I was doing
basically watching your back, or did you go after, or did you go too hard at the president? You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I mean, I know that I did, and I was very vocal about it. I mean, Rick Sanchez had me on the show a lot because he thought that I was very vocal in attacking President Obama during the election, and he brought me on because he thought that I was entertaining in a lot of ways. That's why he always brought me on. I have to find this audio. You have to give me a second because I will find this. But when I heard this, I was saying to myself, could I be a victim of that? I don't like using the term victim. But to me, it just now, the way that I'm looking at this and the way this conversation about the whole neocon thing is coming up in court, I'm starting to really, really start to think about this. Especially in the manner of which Rachel Ferrari, the prosecutor, keeps bringing it up.
Let's ask you this. If you were in Kansas, Nebraska, Oklahoma, would the word neocon ever be brought up? Yeah. I doubt it. But you're being in New York County, the heart of the beast.
Yeah.
This is what is at stake in their minds. You're the trophy. We bagged him, and we'll do whatever we can. And even though we might lose, who gives a shit? Let's drag him through the mud and wear him down. Wear him down over and over. It's like a bill collector. They know they might not win, but they'll keep on calling you every day to wear you down, hoping that you'll just say, to hell with it, and give up. And then they can move on to the next guy.
Yeah, and that's the part that I have the biggest problem with, Dennis, about all this. And I'm sorry I kept James on, but I guess he was uncomfortable. The part about this that bothers me so much at this particular point is, like, we've come so far with 4 years of going through this. Mm-hmm. Why would we give up now?
Exactly.
The fact
you know,
of the matter is,
4 years. Why
there's only one guy I knew that went for 4 years and gave up early, and that was Jimmy Carter. You know, before the results came in from California.
Did he give up? Wait a minute. That's right.
There's also Ross Perot.
No.
He sure enough did give up.
This is when they were still voting in California, but the returns were coming in on the East Coast, and California was still voting, and this was in 1980. He says, I give up. I concede to Ronald Reagan. And the Californians were all pissed at him because there's people all the way down the ballot who were fighting in tight races, and they lost because their people didn't come up. I said, well, the president gave up, so why bother voting now?
Right. I do remember.
It's bad
I do remember.
When you have to explain a bad joke.
Yeah, I just think
if you have to explain it, it's a bad joke.
No, I just think that it's for me at this particular point, it's ridiculous, you know, for us to come this far and just concede just for for the express purpose of getting it over with and
to clean their books up.
Say again.
Well, of course.
To clean their books up. What's in it for you besides 20 years of misery? And so if you're going to lose anyway,
right.
let me ask you this. If you were to lose the case, what are you facing?
20 to 25.
And what's the odds of that happening, or are they just saying time served?
Well, the fact of the matter is there are no odds. Well, the odds are, the fact is that the odds are that he's going to win. Which is why they're trying to clean themselves up right now.
Yeah, I think the biggest argument here is if it turns out to be a mistrial, you know, or if the jury for some odd reason believes the accuser no matter what, and we don't make our case to these people about these claims and they decide, the jury just decides right off the bat, nah, we just believe her and we don't believe him and we don't care about the evidence, you know, I would still have to go. Now, we have plenty.
That didn't happen either.
But I don't understand the word neocon and how it's relevant to any case.
Well, the neocon thing, again, and actually, Dennis, you know what, I sort of agree with you, but I think you're coming at it from a different angle. Here it is. Reese is touted and known as a conservative,
yes.
A black conservative. However,
but how is that when you say just the fact? I come from the Dragnet School of Law. Just the facts, ma'am. What the hell does that have to do with what was germane to the fact of the matter of an alleged rape? I don't understand.
Right.
Unless it was at a party held of neocons and she was invited to a neocon party.
Now, far be it from me to bring race into it, but...
Far, of course, far be it from you. You wouldn't be that one.
However, if...
You wouldn't even eat Uncle Ben's if your life depended on it.
However, you know... I would think that Reese being a black conservative works against him in this case.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. That's exactly the point he's making. James, that's exactly the point he's making.
That's exactly what I'm saying. And that's why they're bringing it up. I'm saying as a matter of law, it has no business being there. And they're bringing it up to...
So why is it...
They are doing it to influence somebody. To poison the well.
But if he was just a conservative, this thing would have been...
I'm saying... That's what I'm saying. This thing, the combination of black and conservative, this is there for a reason to poison the well.
Right.
Of course.
Exactly.
And why?
Hold on, guys. Listen. Here's the audio I was talking about. This guy's name is David Lowry. He's the president of the South Suburban branch of the NAACP in South Suburban Chicago. But this is what he said on a radio show when he told them that he wasn't – well, pretty much he's not supporting Barack Obama. He's not supporting Romney either. But this is what he said on a radio show. Pay close attention. Here it is.
for America, Illinois Regional Director Lewis Raymond, and Lowry says he was explaining to Raymond he won't support President Obama because he is not addressing issues important to the black community.
And he's like the big regional guy for the state of Illinois, so that's why I know that call was intended to try to intimidate me.
Lowry alleges Raymond told him, "I know everything about you," and then said, "We've been watching you," and said, "Since you don't support Obama, we'll deal with you," before hanging up.
There was a threat, so I filed.
Oh, this thing is so slow. Come on. Cut a guy a break. Just today.
But, I mean...
But the bottom line is, he's saying right off the bat that he's told, we'll deal with you. Now,
all right, think of it this, Reese. If you, God forbid, were convicted, what can the liberals say once you're in the trophy? They can say, this is who you might have looked up to, a black conservative. See, we've tarnished him before your eyes. This is how they all are. Come back to the liberal fold where you belong, the black liberal fold.
You know what? You know what? I have to stop you there.
Okay, right. I'm just wondering, you know, I never was black.
Italian,
yes.
I think it's on both sides of the table. I think it's on both sides of the table. All right, so, you know, because I have voted liberally, and even though I am an independent, I have voted more liberally than anything else, I still think that's on both sides of the table.
I'm saying, if, God forbid, he was convicted, would the prosecution, the Democrats, be able to say, see, you put your, you hitched your fortune to the wrong horse. This is not the kind of guy you wanted to go in. You should have listened to us and stay as a liberal.
But no, James, you made the best point. The headline would read,
conservatives.
No. The headline would read, black conservative radio talk show host.
Yes.
Convicted of raping a minor. Or convicted of child rape. That's exactly what the headline would be. The Boston.
I mean, let me ask you this. How many people can remember Bernie Ward?
But
exactly.
Also,
went down the memory hole.
Also, right. But you would find conservatives saying, okay, well, you know what? He was a conservative. He wasn't as conservative as us. You are still, no matter what, other than.
Well, I'm not
Reese,
really.
You remember Bernie Ward? You would, because you're in the industry.
Bernie Ward, where was he a radio host at? Was it in
WKGO?
I was going to say KGO. Okay.
Yeah, and he was nationally syndicated. Ex-priest, white guy, and still a federal prisoner for having kiddie porn.
Wait.
Now, you don't see that.
Wait.
For the story.
Bernie Ward was convicted of having kiddie porn and went to federal prison?
He's in there now, yes.
Wow.
You didn't know that?
When did this happen?
Bernie Ward.
Hold on, when did this happen?
I think you were in the joint when this happened.
Wow.
Yeah, Bernie Ward went to Club Fed.
How long did he get?
He's got about 10 years.
Damn.
But in other words, the story wasn't Bernie Ward's liberal or white liberal.
Right.
You know, Bernie Ward, radio host, and incidentally, he does this for a living. And then let's move on, next story.
Mm-hmm.
However, if it's you, the story has legs.
Well, it's funny because, you know, I've been calling myself Reese on the
radio. And why does the story have legs?
Because he's a black man. He's the
Uncle
Ben every day.
Conservative. However,
exactly.
I mean, and again, and I said, and I will say again, it is on both sides of the table.
No, James,
right?
Hold on. Listen. When the newspapers report a story, you don't read websites like Newsbusters, right? And MRC TV, Media Research.
I do.
I read them every day.
But they bring up this one constant thing when they talk about stories. If there's a story about a liberal or Democrat who's charged with a crime or is being accused of a particular crime, there's sometimes, like, I'll read a headline that says, Washington Post story about such and such being arrested leaves out the fact that he's a Democrat till the ninth paragraph.
If that.
Yeah. or waits until last paragraph to start talk about his party affiliation.
Well, that's fair, isn't it?
No.
Listen to this, Jason. Is going to tell you.
Here it is. All right. Here's a person who was accused of a crime or got caught in the middle of a crime, and it didn't matter.
James?
Who he was or what side of the table he fell on.
Wait for the other shoe to drop. Hey, Reese, give it to him.
I'll prove it right now because I'm going to play this. I'm going to play this later on. But listen to the opening story by Jonathan Carl on ABC News Today talking about the job numbers today. Look at how they start the story on ABC News.
As soon as the new 7.8% unemployment rate was announced, Rush Limbaugh and other conservatives said the White House had cooked the books.
That's how they started the story.
Oh, by the way, before
I'm sorry,
I'm going to tell you, you're going to have two more presidential debates, and then they're going to have revised numbers saying that the unemployment rate is lower than it was under Bush. Watch.
Oh, they probably will. But the bottom line is to start saying that the first people to say that the numbers were cooked, they immediately go to conservatives. They weren't the only people saying that the books were cooked. They weren't the only ones. So the bottom line is when it's a conservative, it's the lead part of the story. Conservative, it'll be conservative radio host Reese Hopkins. But if I was a liberal, it would be Reese
liberal.
Hopkins.
It would still be the same story.
No, it wouldn't. No, it wouldn't.
No. At all.
Yes,
no way would it be the same story.
Yes, it would. I mean, it would be liberal radio hosts, and you would have people on both sides of the table saying, see?
Listen to me, find a story where they ever began talking about that person who has been indicted or sent to jail if they're a liberal, if you ever see it lead with the fact that he's a Democrat.
Here in Massachusetts, we've had three speakers of the House in a row be convicted of felonies. You don't see Democrat speaker Sal DeMasi was sentenced today to X number of years in the federal. It didn't happen.
Exactly.
It won't say Sal DeMasi, but it won't say Democrat Sal DeMasi.
And Sal DeMasi, wait a minute, when did he go? He's in there now. Right?
He got convicted a few months ago, like earlier in the year, and he's serving time in Kentucky. He has terrible cancer, probably terminal, and he's in Kentucky now.
It's something you're forgetting.
What about? Hold on. Wait. What about Chuck?
Schumer?
No. My favorite. Yeah. He's a black guy, bald hair, has the white beard. I always used to make fun of.
Felon Finneran.
No, not Finneran. Chuck. His name was Chuck something. Black guy. Chuck.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he's in the. He said, it's not
you know
a crime to take walk around money. Yeah, he got convicted. Chuck Turner.
Yeah, Chuck Turner.
And
he's in Club Fed now, too. And Diane Wilkinson got sent up, too.
Goodness gracious.
God damn.
Chuck.
But they didn't say Democrat Chuck Turner or Democrat Diane Wilkinson. You didn't know Diane went away?
There are two questions in this world. Either it's racial or it's political.
Well,
you're not
going to
have
Chuck Turner, for those who don't know,
with
the Boston City Councilman.
Or both.
With the huge mutton chops. The white mutton chops.
Yeah. It's always going to be the case. But you know what? You know, as Mary and I have talked about it, and you know,
they didn't say black Chuck Turner, Democrat.
Yeah,
Boston City Council today. No. Yeah. Chuck Turner, paragon of the community, was racially sentenced to a term today. That's how Boston Globe did.
Conferred, and as well, you know, Mr. Hopkins, the man whose name is on the door, has inferred it himself. All right? Most Democrats are what?
Well, they're racist.
I wouldn't agree there.
There's only one way that Reese can save himself. Become a Muslim. They won't dare touch you after that.
But he would have to He would have to admit that he's black.
Yeah.
He'd have to admit that he's black.
Right. Hold on.
That won't happen for Shizzle.
No. For Shizzle, my missile. Word.
We have so much fun on the show. You know, even in the worst of times that he's facing all these problems, we're having too much fun still on this show.
We are. White Mike is with us. Hey, Mike.
Hey, man. It's both political and racial. Because
yes.
You are such an iconoclast as to be a melanin proficient human being who chooses to be a conservative.
And articulate, too, and well-groomed, as Biden would say.
I'm glad you said that, Dennis, because why is it that everyone is so shocked when a black man is articulate?
They're shocked when he's conservative.
That should be the norm. It should be like, I noticed today there's oxygen in the air. Yeah, so? it should be the most normal thing.
Right! I like Dennis.
Mike, you think it's the fact that I'm a black conservative as well?
Of course.
Of course. Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, because not only the thing is both sides can get at you. Both sides can make a case against you.
If you had dreadlocks and you were constantly grabbing your junk and you were a hip hop artist, they wouldn't say squat about you, and you'd have a career when you got all your joints.
Yeah.
Yep. And you can say anything you want.
Why he was in the joint.
I mean, Chris Brown punched the biggest pop star in the world in the face.
No, he did more than punch her in the face.
Okay, wait a minute now. And he cleaned up garbage.
Hey, wait a minute now.
He did. He cleaned up garbage.
Yes, he did. And he cleaned up platinum.
And then took the positive for weed probation.
I'm still sure. And I've said this before, I'm still sure she threw the first punch.
Is it possible to plead that you're colored?
And listen,
huh?
I'm sure that she threw the first punch. However,
yeah.
Not only did he punch her in the face, but he choked her out and left the scene with her unconscious.
I'm not saying
that afterwards... Alright. I'm not saying she deserved it. I'm not saying that she deserved what she got, or I'm not even saying that he didn't go overboard. However, alright, she has already said she is a hot, fiery, maybe not Jamaican, but what's the term?
West Indian.
She's from the Bahamas or something, right?
So,
West Elizabeth Warren.
What I'm saying is this, all right, especially when it comes to women, all right, and I'm not afraid to say it. If you're going to act like a man, don't get offended when you get treated like one.
Because sometimes you gotta check a hoe.
And she wanted, she saw some other hoe, and she was like, no, this is my hoe.
And check that hoe he did.
Right, she tried to check her hoe.
Warning, the sound you're about to hear can be devastating to your ear.
I love it. L-O-V-E-I-T.
You're listening to Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com. see some black people looking at me, man. It ain't us, it's the media. It ain't us, it's the media. The media has distorted our image to make us look bad. Why must you come down on us like that, brother? It ain't us, it's the media. Please cut the fucking dish, okay? 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 When I go to the money machine tonight, all right? I ain't looking over my back for the media. I'm looking for niggas, bitch. Ted Koppel ain't never took this from me. Niggas have. So you think I got three guns in my house because the media outside? Oh, this Mike Wallace, run!
We're back at Teresa on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com. It is October the 5th, 2012. Moving right along, I need to get into this story because I am so sick and tired of people talking about it. Okay? And that it, ladies and gentlemen, is frickin' Big Bird. I am so done with Big Bird. I'm more done with Big Bird than I've ever been in my entire life. And all of these people running around talking about Big Bird. If you were watching the debate, which I caught as they repeated on Fox, as they repeated on Fox News, I heard the Big Bird comment, and I'm trying to figure out whether or not I am reading too much into it or everyone else is a frickin' idiot. In no way did Mitt Romney suggest that he was firing Big Bird, that PBS would be no more, that Sesame Street would no longer air on PBS. In no way did he say that. He said that the subsidy that was coming from the federal government going to PBS, right, would ever continue while he was president of the United States. We would take that money back because PBS, along with taking a government subsidy, every year, or maybe even 6 months, I'm not exactly sure of the timeline, but I know I remember it every year, they have a fundraiser drive. And they get millions upon millions of donations. I forget who the broad is who I always see. This show is sponsored by the Mary, and I never remember what the woman's name is, the something foundation. Every time I turn around, there's even commercials for Audi. This show, Tavis Smiley's show on PBS, is brought to you by Audi. What do you think Audi's paying? $20? Audi is a freaking luxury car. Now, to give you a dynamic here, I want to break this down to you, okay? Having been in radio for so long, and I know that JC is going to vouch for me here, okay? This is what happens in radio. If you pay attention to AM radio versus FM radio, if you go to your pop stations or your urban stations, pay attention to who the sponsors are. The infamous Hot 97 in New York. Big sponsors, McDonald's, Popeye's Chicken. You'll probably get a couple of rim shops. And when I say rims, you know, for the car. 20s, you know, they spinning, nigga, they spinning. You know what I'm talking about. Rims. They'll probably have some hardcore liquor. Maybe Slits malt liquor. Those are on the hip-hop station ads. You go over to places like Z100. That plays pop music. A little bit of hip-hop as well. You watch them, and they've got some very, very popular advertisers. Sometimes McDonald's. Not so much Popeye's Chicken, but they'll definitely have Wendy's or maybe Arby's on there. But they have commercials that appeal to their demographics. A younger group of individuals who listen to that. Now go over to the AM stations. And those AM stations, what do they get for sponsors? Well, they get Mercedes-Benz. They get the aforementioned Audi. They get Land Rover. Why? Because their audience is in a higher tax bracket. They make more money. They're definitely within the $60,000 to $70,000 to $80,000 a year market who can afford the items that they put on there. You can't find places like, okay, a popular radio ad is Angie's List, where you can go in, you know, you can find a plumber, an electrician, a pool cleaner, any one of those things, you go on to Angie's List and you find them, and they appeal to that kind of people who own their own homes. You know, you get Safe Light, people who get damaged windshields and they want their windshield repaired. Safe Light repairs, Safe Light replace. I hear that 1,000 times listening to AM radio. You get those type of commercials. Now, who do we get over at PBS? We get some big money sponsors over there, which is why Tavis Smiley, okay, the black man with his own show on PBS, he gets Audi for crying out loud. It's not like he can't get Mercedes-Benz, but he gets Audi as their primary sponsor. There are no commercials on Tavis Smiley half an hour show. No commercials running. He does 28, 29 minutes. And then they run an Audi commercial at the end. This show brought to you by Audi. And people like you. They always do that. This show made possible by such and such, such and such, and people like you. So all of this crap about Big Bird has brought up the fool-ass Negro who I cannot stand. Now, I'm going to say something a little controversial here. Okay? You ain't been significant since you got your ass whipped in Roots. Okay? Simply, Kunta Kinte. When the master gives you a name, you take it. Toby, that's a good nigga. Remember that? Remember that line? I know you do. But this moron is on Soledad O'Brien. Yes, on Soledad O'Brien. Talking about Mitt Romney's claims to cut funding to PBS and creates a straw man argument. Let's listen to Soledad O'Brien and LeVar Burton, Toby, talking about this case.
CEO of PBS, Paula Kerger, said that she nearly fell off the couch while she was watching the debate and she heard that particular part of the debate. Oh, what was your reaction? Did you have the same reaction?
I was outraged.
Now, hold on. I have to stop it. Soledad talks about the CEO of PBS says that she fell off her chair when she heard Mitt Romney talk about PBS. But at the end of this audio, you're going to hear the CEO of PBS say something patently different. But here's LeVar Burton with Soledad O'Brien.
You know, the CEO of PBS, Paula Kerger, said that she nearly fell off the couch while she was watching the debate, and she heard that particular part of the debate. What was your reaction? Did you have the same reaction?
I was outraged. I couldn't believe the man actually fixed his mouth to say that. I interpreted it as an attack on children, Soledad.
The Sesame Workshop receives very, very little funding from PBS. You can debate whether or not there should be funding of public broadcasting, but when they always sort of tout out Big Bird and say we're going to kill Big Bird, or that actually is misleading.
It's misleading. Nobody said that they were going to defund Big Bird and Sesame Street. And
you
I'm sorry.
You can debate whether or not there should be funding of public broadcasting. But
this is Sherry Weston, who is the CEO. Let me get
you
her
can
exactly.
debate whether or not there should be funding.
She is the executive VP and chief marketing officer for Sesame Workshop. Now, LeVar Burton is outraged. Said this
Sesame
is an attack. This is an attack on children, is what he says. An attack on children.
You know, the CEO of PBS, Paula Kerger, said that she nearly fell off the couch while she was watching the debate, and she heard that particular part of the debate. What was your reaction? Did you have the same reaction?
I was outraged. I couldn't believe the man actually fixed his mouth to say that. I interpreted it as an attack on children, Soledad.
The Sesame Workshop receives very, very little funding from PBS. You can debate whether or not there should be funding of public broadcasting, but when they always sort of tout out Big Bird and say we're going to kill Big Bird, or that actually is misleading because Sesame.
So PBS takes the money that very little of the money that they receive even goes to Sesame Street. And why is that? Probably because of the money they make off frickin' Tickle Me Elmo. I think Tickle Me Elmo alone funds Sesame Street. I think Elmo comes out there and says, "Hi, boys and girls, I'm Elmo. been 40 years, for crying out loud. When did they start? November 7th, 1969. That's how long they've been around. They don't get any funding for PBS, and people are making this about Big Bird. Fool-ass Negroes. LeVar Burton. I think this is an attack on children. You spent 21 years on Reading Rainbow. You didn't make no money anywhere else. Oh, that's right. Weren't you that voting? What was his name? What was his name? LaForge. I don't even. James knows who this moron was. What was James? What was this? What was Jordy LaForge? What was that loser's name? James isn't even there.
Hey, Ray,
James, I'm making a Star Trek reference and you're missing. I cannot believe this lunatic, LeVar Burton. Where you been? Are you waiting on Roots 12? What? I mean, for crying out loud. What is going on here?
What Mitt Romney said was, check this out. China owns us right now.
Mm-hmm.
And if I got to borrow money from China to fund PBS, I'm sorry, but Big Bird will be no more.
Well, he didn't say that.
I mean, I know he didn't say that.
I have
but
a question
just...
for you.
Go for it.
The question is, now, if there's no more funding, does that mean there's an opening for Jerry Curls to fund Tavis Smiley?
Maybe.
I remember when they had a big controversy just to even mention a sponsor, never mind to have the sponsor. Now, you know this is all money-driven. You follow the money. If all these shows are that popular, because the mantra of PBS is, if we don't do it, who else will? Well, a hell of a lot of other people will. A lot of other channels will open up, because it's not like you just had the three networks and educational TV, now PBS, like it was when you were born, when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have cable. You have hundreds of channels.
That's the interesting part about this, and I wanted to talk about that, Dennis. You're absolutely right.
And PBS, who watches PBS?
Right, PBS isn't alone anymore with the whole how kids get their programming anymore. With the Disney Channel and Nickelodeon and its 17 other channels, you know.
Because when Big Bird came up with Sesame Street, that was the only source for educational children's programming. That was
it. But you know what? I don't think that a great deal of the money that they're getting from the government, if any at all, but they didn't throw no figures out there, but I don't think that money has made really a difference other than maybe buying coffee since Barney popped on the scene.
But that's not the point. If 5 cents was given to them, that 5 cents is taken, and it can be at gunpoint from you and me. If you don't pay your taxes, you watch what happens. They'll come after you at gunpoint if they have to take that money in taxes. So it's not whether they need it or not, what they spend it or not. The fact is they're getting it or anything else that government takes. There's only one source it can come from, and that's you and me.
Well,
and if you don't pay it, you're up
against
the creek.
They don't need government funding. I really don't think they need it.
They don't need it.
The money that they're using that they get, the government subsidy that PBS is getting, is actually funding their affiliates. In essence, it's to keep them afloat.
And the affiliates are saying, we're out in the middle of who knows where, Nebraska, and nobody's going to watch us unless supported. Well, you know what? Isn't that the same arguments the liberals said about banks, that they were too big to fail, that we shouldn't support them? Well, then what's good for the goose is good for the gander.
Well, wait a minute. I'm confused now, because our PBS station here, Channel 24 in Hartford, they've got like a month of a marathon drive.
Right, exactly. All of that is private. It's private charitable donations to PBS. Remember, PBS.
But
is
there
a
are
whole,
some marginal PBS stations out in the hinterlands.
Right.
We're in the Northeast, so it's pretty well funded because liberals like to fund PBS and they like to watch it.
Exactly.
But out in Montana, you're going to have a problem. Sort of like a rural post office.
I mean, yeah, but speaking But speaking different, I mean, Connecticut alone, our PBS carries our women's UConn games. And that's huge up here.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure that those games, they get sponsorship money to air those games on PBS. And
right,
if that's where you're getting your women's basketball.
Yeah, and I mean, when women's basketball's on, the PBS rankings rank network television on those nights, especially here in Connecticut.
That is a huge, they get huge money for broadcasting that. But remember, you're in a smaller market. So the subsidy that the government gives to PBS, they go to help out your station to stay afloat if you're an affiliate. The stations like GBH in Boston, the money they get is astronomical, as Dennis will tell you, with the new building they built with the new digital screen over the Mass Pike.
How many shows you see that originated from GBH to begin with, as compared to other stations out in the hinterland? You don't see a station brought to you by Austin Television. It just doesn't
happen.
Right. It's GBH is the engine that pushes most of it.
Yes, exactly. A lot of programming comes out of GBH, which is, of course, you know, why they can afford that huge-ass building.
And it doesn't mean God bless Harvard. It means Great Blue Hill, you know.
Oh, does it?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Well, see, you learned something here on Reese on the Radio, only here.
Oh, those folks hated me over at GBH.
I can imagine.
They hated me over at
GBH. You mean
GBH.
Tom Lydon didn't like you?
I did a bit in the GBH, it wasn't the GBH cafeteria, but it was in the cafeteria that GBH shared with intercom.
Damn it, you forgot to wear your waiter's coat again?
No, I came downstairs and we were filming a bit called Hug a White Woman Day.
Uh-oh.
And it was Hug a White Woman Day because it was when Hillary Clinton was on the campaign stump and she was at that diner or whatever and she was crying about how much she loved the country and she didn't think that people believed that about her. And I said that, you know, this poor white woman is feeling neglected and rejected because this, you know, black man is surging in the polls. And I said that we needed to do a White Woman Appreciation Day. So I invented Hug a White Woman Day. And we filmed it inside the cafeteria. And GBH was downstairs in the lunchroom. And I came into the lunchroom and I said, folks, I'm Reese Hopkins from Reese on the Radio. And with Hillary Clinton feeling as if white women are not being respected, I figured it was only right that we named today Hug a White Woman Day.
What the hell were you thinking? You were Howard Stern?
I said, if there's a white woman next to you, give her a hug. And sure enough, a couple of guys from intercom started hugging a woman next to her.
Oh, Jesus.
And I walked around the cafeteria, and I was hugging a couple of white women, and I was joking with them. And I said to one girl when she was sitting there, I was like, come on, get up and give me a hug. I said, you remember that one time in college, implying, you know, that time when she dated a black guy.
Right.
And there's this one part of the video.
Did she ever go back?
This older woman runs from one end of the cafeteria all the way into my arms and hugs me. And when we put it on YouTube, we actually had her running and we threw it in slow motion. And played like this romantic music of her running to come and give me a hug. It was brilliant. But GBH, this is what makes this all hilarious. GBH employees got up with their tray and walked out.
Of course they did.
And complained about it.
You mean
everybody
that they weren't being socially acceptable, open-minded?
I'm like, come on. It's like
inclusive.
It's a gag. I'm like, I didn't even understand what they were so upset about.
I remember that video.
You remember that?
Yeah.
I thought that was
brutal. Because you highlight the absurdity of modern life being so absurd.
Well, I thought she was running. I thought she was running in there playing like the Chariots of Fire theme behind her.
Yes, they were playing exactly. They were playing Chariots of Fire as she was running to me to give me a hug. That was brilliant. It was.
That was
brilliant.
Funny.
The guys who produced it were great. They were great. I love that. But this whole thing, I'm trying to get this audio up of this guy. His name is Representative Mario Diaz Balart.
Florida.
She's a representative out of Florida.
It's a woman.
No, no, Mario Diaz.
Is that the, is that the, is that the wife?
No, it's Mario Diaz.
Oh, okay.
No, no, no. He's the representative out of Florida. Republican.
I thought there were
Florida.
Two of, I thought there were two Diaz, two of them with that name out of Florida. A husband and wife. I could be mistaken.
Oh, okay.
He was
talking to Carol Costello of CNN, and she tried to bring up this whole Big Bird thing, and I don't know if I'll get the audio, but he took a big fat Shatner on her on the air for mentioning. If I don't get the audio, let me just at least read you the transcript because I know that's here. Okay, he says, here it is. Costello says to him, "What is with this computer today? It's been working fine all day, and now it's just..." Okay, here we go. She says, "Congressman, the moment that resonated probably the most with viewers was Mitt Romney's comments on Big Bird and taking money away from the program, PBS. Some people say, why are you picking on Big Bird of all things? Mario Diaz says, Big Bird is a multi-million dollar venture. Big Bird will be fine, trust me. The question is, does Big Bird still need to be on welfare? Does the taxpayer need to be funding a multi-million dollar venture? Big Bird is always going to be on TV. But the question is, should we be sending hard-earned taxpayer money to, you know, the entity that is a multi-million dollar entity that's going to be there with or without a taxpayer subsidy? And again, having to borrow money from China." Costello responds, "Well, I just talked to the CEO and the president of PBS. She says that money from the government doesn't go directly to Sesame Street. It goes to member stations, and they decide what to do with the money. And this has been a great public-private partnership, Sesame Street. She says, is America's like poor kids get their education from Sesame Street. This is a show that is beloved by millions of Americans." So she contradicts herself here. She says the money doesn't go directly to Sesame Street, nor did Romney ever imply that. Why are we saying that we're picking on Big Bird? Anyway.
I made a mistake. There are two Diaz ballots, and they're brothers or cousins, and they used to be Democrats, and they're Republicans now.
Now, Diaz ballot says two things. First place, Sesame Street is always going to be there with or without a taxpayer subsidy. So that's a red herring, you know. That was, I think, a pretty light moment. And, you know, he says it was a light moment to talk about. Well, I'm not sure it's a red herring because the amount of money given by the government to PBS stations is a drop in the bucket in comparison to what other things the government pays money for. With all due respect, with the situation that we're facing in our country, with millions of people unemployed, with people, you know, you look at the economic numbers, and we're going to have new numbers coming out this week. To be focusing on a presidential debate on a light moment where the Governor Romney mentioned that he wouldn't be subsidizing, borrowing money from China to be subsidizing things that frankly don't have to be subsidized, that's the takeaway that you found from the debate? I mean, frankly, that's the best you could come up with from this debate? You think that was the highlight moment from this debate? You don't think the highlight moment was when we were talking about how to create jobs? No, that's not what I think, she says. It's not what I think. It's been the public reaction to the comment. It's not me saying it. I think there's a Facebook page with 26,000 people on board. You got 23 million people out of work. You want to talk about a drop in the bucket, bitch? Give me a break.
0.001%.
Jesus freaking Christ. Anyway, I got to take a break. Freaking annoying. I'm just done with them. Anyway, we'll talk about the job numbers and how the rest of the media are spinning it when we get back. I'm absolutely astonished by it.
But this was
the
first thing that I told you. After I watched the debate, the first thing that came up, the first post that came up on Facebook was about Big Bird. That's what every left-leaning liberal was talking about, Big Bird. If that's what you were talking about, your right to vote, if that's what you were concentrated on, and that's what caught your eye and your attention, your rights to vote should be removed from
you.
You
really, really believe people should not have the right to vote.
Not if you're if you have to be an idiot. That's what you took out of this? That you didn't dissect anything else. You heard him. I mean, and these are people that are, you know, of all age groups.
Yeah, I know that.
Have kids, don't have kids, whatever.
Mary,
that's what you look
Mary,
at.
Mary, don't be stunned. Don't be stunned. ABC, NBC, and CBS all ran a story on it.
Oh, I know.
They all ran a story on it.
Of course they did, because it went crazy all over Facebook.
The only people who laughed at it was Fox. They were the only people who laughed at it. The fact that they even brought it up.
And excuse me, I don't want my tax-paying money going to Big Bird, because you know what? I ain't got no goddamn kids. I don't have any kids that need to watch freaking PBS and get an education. So I don't want my tax-paying money to go to other people's kids.
Well, even
pay your own kids' way, goddammit.
We'll take a break. We'll be back in 3 seconds.
Yo, man. Hey, you ever go to these bars, right? It's like a nice enough place, nice enough people. But the bartender thinks he's too fancy, man. You know? I'm like, hey, Mr. Mixologist. Did you have to go to college for this? It seems like you got some knowledge. It's just a cocktail for $20 plus tip. Hey, Mr. Mixologist. Did you have to go to college for this? I know your game is tight, but for the drinks, right? At this rate, we'll be standing here all night out. So there's this bar. Everybody's like, you gotta go. I'm at the door. What's the password?
I don't know.
We entered through a phone booth or something crazy.
Oh, my God. They have the best drinks here. It's amazing.
Ooh, I saw the bartender. He looked like a nice dude. He was pouring a drink with one big-ass ice cube. I'm like, excuse me, sir. Could I get a beer? He gave me this look like, why are you even in here? I was confused. Did we start on a bad note? He's wearing waxing his mustache and a lab coat. I'm like, what's the matter? Is beer too boring? He's like, well, this cocktail dates back to pre-Civil War New Orleans.
Wow.
It's real cool, man. Can you suggest something tighter? He hands me this list that was typed up on a typewriter. I ordered something and he lit it on fire. Dude, you've been watching way too much Boardwalk Empire.
For real.
Hey, Mr. Mixologist.
Yeah.
Did you have to go to college for this?
Did you?
It seems like you got some knowledge. It's just a cocktail for $20 plus tip. Hey, Mr. Mixologist.
Sup, man?
Did you have to go to college for this?
Same.
I know your game is tight, but for the drinks, right? At this rate, we'll be standing here all night.
Keep it simple, sir, because I ain't nothing to muddle with. I got some burlesque dancers I'm trying to cuddle with. So whip some drinks up twice and double it.
Well, have you tried our aviation or Ramos Fizz?
Whoa. Are you even speaking English, chief? Or rum and coke times two, capiche?
Oh, you must mean our handcrafted Cuba Libre.
If it's quick, bro, you're moving slower than instant
replay.
He dripped a half ounce of something I couldn't pronounce. And by that time, I flap a chicken straight down. I'll speak easy, boss, but I gotta call you bluff. You need to drink, too. Can't be all that, huh? Pour the liquor in and swirl it in a circle. But you're on the things like a Shapeway commercial. I'll have a beer, guy, whenever you're done mixing. Second thought, boycott. Prohibition.
Hey, Mr. Mixologist, did you have to go to college for this? It seems like you got some knowledge. It's just a cocktail for $20 plus tip. Hey, Mr. Mixologist, did you have to go to college for this? I know your game is tight, but for the drinks, right? At this rate, we'll be standing here all night.
Hey, could I get a Sazerac, man? With muddled sage. No? Okay.
Yes, this is a smoked salmon-infused vodka with a few drips of ice plant tincture served over crushed lava rock.
What star food? Hey, are you putting raw eggs in that? You don't get salmon, there's no salmonella danger or anything like that?
We're Sunday Radio, we're back. That's not supposed to be there. My apologies. Anyway, Reese on the radio, bottom of the hour right here on blogtalkradio.com. JC, why is your mic still on? And he probably couldn't tell me. He's just flipping back and forth. I wonder if he got his computer back up. Anyway, jobless numbers. They're back up. But it doesn't matter. Because the unemployment rate went down to 7.8%. Is it bogus? Well, don't ask the people over at NBC. They will tell you different because they are excited for the President of the United States.
Oh, of course they are.
They are so excited for the President of the United States.
It was all over CNN.
Oh, they couldn't stop talking about it.
Good evening, Brian. In a week that has been a roller coaster for both campaigns, today's job numbers finally gave the President a jolt of good news. But even that set off a political fight over what those numbers really mean. The news that unemployment had dipped below 8% for the first time since he took office came just in time for a president battered by his poor performance in this week's debate.
Today's news should give us some encouragement. It shouldn't be an excuse for the other side to try to talk down the economy just to try to score a few political points.
Not surprisingly, Mitt Romney saw it differently.
There are fewer new jobs created this month than last month.
Romney argued today's numbers disguise the fact that people have stopped trying to even find jobs.
So it looks like unemployment's getting better, but the truth is, if the same share of people were participating in the workforce, today is on the day the president got elected, why our unemployment rate would be around 11%.
It's true that only 114,000 jobs were added last month, a modest number. But economists say more people were working, not just getting discouraged and giving up trying to find a job.
How do you know that? Like, how do you know that?
And soft numbers from the last 2 months were revised upward. Still, manufacturing was weak.
We're seeing a lot of volatility in these numbers on a month-to-month basis. So until we see a consistent trend in the numbers that show consistently we're generating a lot of jobs and we're seeing a lot more people participate, you kind of take it with a grain of salt.
While the market saw good news, some Republicans saw a conspiracy. Jack Welch, former chairman of GE, minority owner of NBC, accused the White House of cooking the books, tweeting, "These Chicago guys will do anything. Can't debate, so change the numbers." When pressed by Chris Matthews, Welch wouldn't take it back.
"I have no evidence to prove that. I just raised the question."
Did you talk to any economists or any people in the national income accounting world that understood how these numbers were put together before you accused these Chicago guys of changing the numbers?
It seems coincidental that 1 month before the election, they would end up at 7.8.
The numbers are crunched by economists in the Independent Bureau of Labor Statistics, civil servants, not political appointees.
They're not political appointees, but it was already proven that people from the budget office are Obama donors.
These are our best trained and best skilled individuals that have been working in the BLS, and it's really ludicrous to hear that kind of statement.
A prominent Romney supporter, economist Douglas Polsekin, agrees.
There is no way these were manipulated for political purposes. The people who put together these numbers are professional civil servants who are experts in their area. The process is one of integrity.
While the jobs report gave the president a boost, Romney is trying to neutralize a Democratic attack line over his comment to wealthy contributors that 47% of Americans...
Still talking about the 47%, Andrea Mitchell?
And those people that are coming up with those numbers, a portion of those people work at unemployment, right?
Well, no.
Work for the Department of Unemployment. Those are civil.
Oh, are they?
I believe that they are.
Well, I don't even know that. I've never even
heard
that.
And, you know, in the Office of the Unemployment a few months ago, several months ago, actually, it was reported that people that worked in unemployment were receiving unemployment benefits, although they were still working.
Yeah, but I just found out that a considerable amount of these 114,000 people who were hired, a lot of them were, well, not a lot of them, but at least a portion of them were government jobs. But I don't see how you get a lower trend of numbers from last month. Like, this is less than half of the number from last month. Okay. Employed. So in other words,
In 1 month.
Last month you get 300 some odd thousand. This one you only get 114,000, and the unemployment
and your percentage
goes down.
Drops.
Yeah,
it drops.
Makes
it drops about 5 points.
No, that's crap load.
I'm saying that's how much it dropped.
Four,
what was it? 8-3?
No, it was 8-1.
It was
8-7-8.
Okay, so it dropped 3 points.
4 points.
That's ridiculous. In 1 month? In
no,
1 month?
Absolutely not.
Because I can tell you, at my place of employment, you know, we always know, first of all, the month of September, anybody can probably tell you this. The month of September and the month of October are generally the least profitable months of the year.
Really?
Yes.
Well, that's probably why the numbers were only 114,000. So it's like not a lot of new hires.
So who the hell is creating all these, you know, 4 points worth of jobs in a month when these are the two worst months of the year?
Could not tell you. Dennis, do you believe that the books are cooked?
Well, let's put it this way. We have 330 million people in the United States, okay? And you're better than math than I am.
Okay.
In July, 181,000 jobs were added. It was 8.3% unemployment.
Right.
August, 142,000 jobs added. 8.1% unemployment. September, 114,000 jobs added. Now it's 7.8.
Yeah,
and, you know, I think if we have at the end of October, when we are finished with all the presidential debates, you're going to see the unemployment to pre-Bush levels in the revised stats.
Well, when you say pre-Bush levels, I mean, you're not going to be talking – you're not talking about 2006, because in 2006 –
I'm going to say that all of a sudden the revised numbers are going to be the lowest unemployment ever in the history of the nation.
You'd have to go below 4.8%. That's
literally. Well, that's what I'm saying. Notice I said after the end of the presidential debate, but before the election.
Well, there's new
magically
job
the numbers will change in the revised stats.
Right. No,
you mentioned Andrea Mitchell. The same Andrea Mitchell who had her head handed to her by John Sununu yesterday, or the day before,
yeah,
I don't know if you heard.
Calling Obama lazy?
Yeah.
Yeah, but again, what my whole thing is, John Sununu calls him lazy, and it's Andrea Mitchell that implies calling someone lazy is racist.
But he said so himself that he was lazy just earlier.
He said that, right, coming from Hawaii, being laid back, he has sort of like a laziness. I think it was Barbara Walters who asked him a year ago, what's the one trait about yourself and the one trait about others that you don't like? And he said laziness.
It is another nigger moment. you know what I'm saying?
She said, the bottom line.
Well, only black people can call themselves nigger, but nobody else can. You know what I mean?
You can't call him lazy. Andrea Mitchell.
Don't call himself, but no. God forbid that the king has no clothes. We can't mention it.
But that was the whole bottom line when he said that coming from Hawaii, he said he had a tendency, a very laid back attitude, which called
like a surfer attitude, kind of like a whale, you know.
Plus, he said he was forced into the debate because he's up in whatever the hell he was doing, and he says, you know, they're forcing me into this thing, implies he didn't want to do it. And then you get Al Gore saying, well, it really was a case of the high altitude. I think Al was the only one that was high in that statement.
I thought Al Gore was on drugs when he said it.
And listen, Dennis, the only time that it'll be a nigger moment if they added the word shiftless ass right before it.
Yeah, or he was well articulate during the debate.
Shiftless ass Negro was a little screwed. I almost cursed. Him in a debate, that was embarrassing. I was embarrassed for him.
Well, because he hasn't had the debate in over 4 years. The last one he debated was Hillary Clinton. He hasn't had any press conferences.
But
the last one he debated
was
Clinton when he was running for president. And Romney hasn't shut up for 8 years. I mean, in a nice way, because he's been debating and sharpening his skills.
But you know what? It's interesting about that. But what I said was the biggest issue that I saw in this debate, I'll tell you what the biggest problem was. What was Obama's strong suit in a debate? Excuse me, strong suit in the debates against Hillary Clinton and even John McCain.
He hadn't
had a record to
he
run.
He hadn't
on.
Been vetted either.
Right, and he hadn't been vetted. No one would talk about certain things about his past, so people hadn't really done their research on him. And if they even approached him, they were, you know, it was Katie bar the door. If somebody even brought up, you know, his communist leanings, being a part of the new party, those things.
Hillary had baggage from her husband.
Right.
And McCain was old and tired. He had already run the race 4 years earlier.
Right.
And he had the millstone of Bush. So here's a brand-new articulate face coming out of God knows where. And let's face it, the guy could spin a tail. And he sounded nice. He was going to be the Black Reagan.
No. He could spin a tail because he had no record to really, really go up against. If you really look at the record.
Right, but if you're Joe Doakes, who doesn't know anything, and you listen to this guy for the first time, and say, geez, you know, he reminds me of Ronald Reagan. He's inspiring.
Right. Well, no, listen to what I'm saying here. And I'm looking at this from a different perspective. When Barack Obama is using the words hope and change, and most of the people who are stumping for him, and I'm not talking
it's
about
whatever they think it's going to be.
No, yeah. Right. I'm not talking about political pundits. I'm talking about supporters, the average American.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying for the average person, hope and change can be whatever you think it is in your mind. It was never defined. It was never vetted.
Exactly.
What do you mean, Barack, by hope?
Right.
What do you mean by change? Let's see the details.
Right. And the most important thing about that was that I found interesting was whenever you would mention something like Barack Obama as state senator, Barack Obama in Illinois, Barack Obama had 170 days in office, 170 days present in office. During a four-year stint, he spent 170 days present inside that actual office. He spent most of the time campaigning. Whenever you brought that up as an argument about him not having experience, people would argue, they were saying, but that's what we need. We need somebody who's not a career politician. And that meme, that narrative, carried the day for Barack Obama. He's not an insider. He's an outsider. That's what we need. So you couldn't even criticize him about not being an insider.
Else who has such a piss-poor attendance record, they would have laughed at him and throw him out.
Exactly. But now,
but because he was black, let's give him a lot of slack because white guilt.
Right. But now he's got 4 years. I think the problem in this debate was that Barack Obama could not go on the, hey, he's an outsider thing anymore. Now your record has got to supersede everything it is that you talked about.
But I'm going to tell you something, and this is frightening because, you know, I was taking the cab to the hospital. I'm asking the cab driver, white guy. I said, what do you think about Barack Obama? He said, you know, it's the Republicans' fault. They won't pass anything. They're blocking him every step of the way. And then I'm telling him, Obama had a complete run for the first 2 years. Nevertheless, it doesn't register. It doesn't register with some of these morons.
Never, ever, ever going to sink in to any one of these people. It's never going to sink into any one of these people. And I don't expect it to. I sincerely do not expect
it. They don't want to know how government works. They're happy in their own cocoon.
Well, that's pretty much who they are.
Yeah.
I mean, they are cocoon-like. You know, that's who these people are.
Of course, I don't know. Maybe you can just say cuck and you can't say the other word. Can't say coon.
Oh, you're funny. Oh, you know what I got to do?
I'm bad.
I haven't done it in a while.
And you're getting this for free right here on Reese on the Radio, on Blog Talk Radio.
I've got to do this because I haven't done it in a while, and I promised that I would. So, JC, tell me about that story on Monday because we're going to do that story on apparently there's another Trayvon Martin-type shooting in Connecticut.
Uh-oh.
So I want to make sure that we talk about that when we get that. So I haven't done this in a while, and I figure it's only right because, you know, I don't know what we're going to be doing next week as far as the show's concerned. We'll do a show Monday. I don't know what we'll do for the rest of the week.
I don't know we'll do a show Monday.
Can you dig up Johnny Cash and do Live from Folsom?
I'll
probably do that. I don't know. I'll probably do that next week to find out. Oh, JC just sent me the FSB story. But I'm going to do Friday Night Dance Party tonight. Just so we can get out of here early. Dennis, we hope you feel better. You know,
I am. I really am. It's great coming on the show. It lightens my spirit. Well, I can't say lighten. I can't even say darken. What the hell can I say? It makes my spirit I can't say brighten.
Well, you know, I'm glad to lift your spirits in any particular way.
There you go.
Well, we appreciate.
Of course, you can't say spirit because then you'll think of Joe Biden on a regular day.
Well, we
what he's been drinking, I don't know. Oh, okay. Did you see what he said today? He admitted he's going to raise your taxes. He says, you know, we're going to. He did a Walter Mondale moment.
You know, I'm pretty sure that they are going to find a way to duct tape that man's mouth shut.
It's the week from tonight when the entertainment comes through.
We'll
the,
talk
the
to you
vice
on Monday,
POTUS
Dennis.
Debate.
We'll keep in touch with you on Facebook and email and stuff, okay?
Thank you, sir. Good night.
You got it, man. We love you. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
All right, folks, that's our show. Please check out let's do our throwback edition. It's been a while. It's Friday night. Long overdue Friday night dance party.
For Rizzo, my nizzle.
Yeah, holler back, youngin'.
Whoop, whoop. Holler back.
You know what time it is. It's time for the Friday night dance party.
With the rock, I'm not a rough guy, but a tough guy to beat over drums. No son to this, I'm a rhyme bastard. The master, the art of cast, but not the part to last to disappear after doing 2 hours. We're not your noble team, and we still do hours of sick. Hope inside this, don't find it. Quits for those who oppose the new, playing their mouth grown rap like a size 5 shoe. Oh, they all need you now. Alternative touch, what surprise or demise for us? We on the rise to bust big. How you big? We couldn't never run out of birds for you to sip. I told you we wouldn't. I never pop Chris, but pop this girl named Chrissy. Was the first, which made it even worse not to miss me.
Try standing over. Yep. 7 box sets, repping 16 years. This rap career ain't work. It's the life in between bedtime till the next set time and date. Know the name and salute them dudes. Put the nutrient in rap when they cook them food. Gotta be like 18 million heads served. Should imagine if it wasn't no us, huh? So I'd like to take the time to shout out to JB. Next on my list is the Tribe Called Quest. Like me for my queen, only love, dread, and Mr. Long. G. Ali, hold your head, God bless. Never ring chasing. The permanent chat in this rap shit, y'all are just temporary lick on. Fading in the days to come, while the names they lie and the legacy built lives on.
We are singing.
Sing it out now.
Use this
sending you a message, y'all.
Through our music.
Through the music.
Reaching for a
another day, y'all.
Lift up
this is it, what? Luchini pouring from the sky, let's get rich, what? The Gigi Bopper sugar dime, can't quit, what? Now pop the cork and bring the Vega and get lit, what?
Introduced in Phantom of the Dark, walk through my hazard with levitation from reefers, drenching divas and each seven showboating with rugas, flash vines, Belafonte jigger. Let's get forward this verse as we confiscate your figures.
Chanting over Brown, levitating Gigi and Ashiki's a La Hada car. 54, chasing diamond runners, headed ice fan. Flipping killer diamond convention, Harlem Buck strut. Freezing world heights, Hollywood, Madam Butterfly. Let me in your house, the pleasure from the knuckle swat. Shadow boxes catching black eye blue.
I play the thief, what? Sensations at the Monte Carlo, screaming Chiba. Fulfilling pleasures in my capsule, blow the smoke out. The Garza Vega substitutes when the Dutch is gone. Solo don't stop, give me shouts, it's the season. Sartellas, two players for swerving no corners. We magnets to moolah, living with Charlie's Angels on us. No smiling when sliding, that gets you caught up in the octa or dead if we're moving. It's just like that as we proceed.
Saturday night special, better take it light. You jive, jive, you're the Cappy Sam. West to the coast, the Key Largo, wire the chain gang. Keep your ears out for a year, sip the fountain blue, house of bamboo, paradise.
This is it, what? Luchini pouring from the sky, let's get rich, what? The Gigi Bopper sugar dime, can't quit, what? Now pop the cork and see the Vega and get lit, what? This is it, what? This is it, what? Luchini pouring from the sky, let's get rich, what? The Gigi Bopper sugar dime, can't quit, what? Now pop the cork and see the Vega and get lit, what? What? What?
Fallen sparrows from the seas, a black shooter that can miss a silky days, fat and nice, taking flight, Dino going, three sensations, Spanish flying with the lady Scarface, bottoms up, sunshine, love potion number
and we
nine.
It from the magic city, transcending sweeter on your aura, Fontini in London, relaxation in Bora Bora, got notion to bring it, sing it, never been my function, stoning, robbing, we heisting merchandise and gunning, love it, leave it, but bless the war chief for his bison, get it, got it, the low will forever be nice.
Yeah, the sunny fever, he be sipping on my red dye. They get you great, cause he be sipping on my red dye. We float the tri-state, draped in the satin vine. This coolie hijack, packed from the sugar shack. Then what we do after we sip the armor red dye? We start the Harlem River quiver, digging sweet daddy. Sharpen the crimson blade, hot Sierra serenade. Anatomy for seduction, be this
yeah,
ebony
as we exit the place with grace. Jersey armor rather than burst in the clouds. It pours, everything seems better on flash with love. We move only in the mist. It's slow, it's life, and we can't get enough yeah, of this. This is it, what? Luchini pouring from the sky, let's get rich, what? The Gigi Bopper sugar dime, can't quit, what? Now pop the cork and see the Vega and get lit, what? This is it, what? This is it, what? Luchini pouring from the sky, let's get rich, what? The Gigi Bopper sugar dime, can't quit, what? Now pop the cork and see the Vega and get lit, what? This is it, what?
Love and devotion.
Don't
fight. There's a trust of us and ocean. It's going to flip that she's so.
Move lyrics that take place. If you want
want another reason. Why it must be funky, yo. I am not a jackass, meaning not a donkey. So I will play the game. Like a cheapy plan, drop the fuck into the mix so the face will never fade. Ship it to the phantom, in your jurisdiction. Brothers say I'm broke, and the others say I'm bitching. No crowd can avoid the D.O. to the C. When the P.O. for I-M-I-N-G on the stage. See the simple fact is I am dope and known. I rock a funky beat without a course. So here is my conclusion. You will enjoy the fusion, and I will ascend with the style that I am using. Knowing that it's tough, then it's not a bust. I think I'll let it play, cause players say it's funky and I'm hip hop music, so check it. Listen to the kick, popping with a click, and with no rehearsals, I'm popping funky verses. Stupid with the business, I think that you are relying on. You love it when it battles with the fact that I am buying on suckers. Never come close to the knowing. There's no stuff in the dock when I am going, but in the event, someone would try to juice this, stop him in his tracks, show him that I am ruthless. I don't give a damn, don't think that I am joking, cause I don't say he is funny when you're messing with my money. It's stupid, tell me this. You gotta stop him, but with no frills. So I just stop him, continue with the rhyme, and make sure I get mine with no static, cause it's open. I send G to get my nine, but nothing's ever nerd. Now I get it all, I'm fun and let it play. When the people say, Trey, oh, you're a fucky and I'm to the sea. I need a break so I can check around. See who the hell that is sitting down. I want all chairs off the floor. And if he stands to the wall, show him the door. And I'm picking up to give you something to rock to. Dug out, not stop to, not to look at the clock. You perceive, but can't believe you're being taken. Five beats so cool, you start shaking and shivering. Cause I'm delivering the answer. Haven't seen if you're a hell of a dancer. You try to say it, but it's work, cause the beat is so fresh, so tell me, tell it, don't be funky enough.
Drop it on me one, boy.